Good afternoon. I'd like to call the House Labor and Commerce Committee to order. Today is Monday, April 17th. Let the record reflect the time is 3:35 p.m. Today we have present Representative Sadler, Representative Prox, Representative Wright, Representative Carrick, Representative Fields, Representative Ruffridge, and myself, Chair Sumner. The staff that will be assisting us today are Suniva with House Records, and Zachary Lawhorn with the LIO, and Clark Bickford, my staff, and committee aide to House Labor and Commerce. Last Friday, we discussed three bills that we are bringing back to the committee today: HB 88 from Representative Rauscher, HB 21 from Representative Vance, and HB 149 from Representative Prox. Starting with HB 88 from Representative Rauscher.
Chairman Sumner, I move and ask for unanimous consent to rescind action on Amendment 3 for HB 88.
Okay, without objection, action has been rescinded. Amendment 3 is now in front of us. Is there objection to Amendment number 3?
What's Amendment number 3?
I will object for purposes of discussion, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Would you like to speak to your objection, Representative Ruffridge?
No, thank you, Chair Sumner. Just would like to hear from the sponsor of the amendment what this amendment does, since I believe I was absent for this discussion last time.
So amendment number 3 increases the threshold at which the bill would apply from 100 employees to 200 employees, with the belief that this will temper the impact on a number of current Alaskan employers and envisions large outside warehouse employers potentially coming to the state in the future that may then and that may at present have questionable workplace records and would apply the bill then to those larger establishments.
Thank you. I will remove my objection.
Okay. Seeing no objection, Amendment number 3 has passed. Representative Ruffridge, what's the will of the committee?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would move House Bill 88, Version A, also referred to as 33-LS0516/alpha, be advanced from committee as amended, with individual recommendations and the attached zero fiscal note.
Okay. Without objection, House Bill 88 has been moved from committee. Now we will move on to House Bill 21 from Representative Vance. We held public testimony over from Friday, so we will start in the room. Is there anybody that wishes to testify on House Bill 21? Don't everyone jump up. No? Okay. We will go online. First, we have a number of and for the record, we do have, for questions, we have Sylvan Robb in the room, if there are questions. We have Patrick Shire with the Pacific Health Coalition, and we have Bonnie Payson, the Executive Director of the Pacific Health Coalition, Glenn Savers with Alaska Department of Corporations, Business and Professional Licensing, Tessa Walker Linderman, also with CBPL, Molly Maeve Lusk with the National Council on State Board of Nursing. Hang on a second. Brief at ease. It looks like we only have one person for public testimony, Clayton Holland. Mr. Holland, you can begin your testimony now. Please put your name on the record. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Chair Sumner. My name is Clayton Holland. I work as the superintendent for the Kenai Peninsula Rural School District, and I'm calling in support of HB 21. For the FY 24 school year, the KPBSD has budgeted $22 million for healthcare, which is approximately 16% of our overall budget coming from the general fund. It is well documented that healthcare costs in Alaska are the highest in the nation. Alaskans spend the most per resident, face the highest insurance premiums, and have seen overall spending grow much faster than the rest of the country. Alaskans spent more out-of-pocket dollars in healthcare costs than residents in any other state. These costs have continued to progressively eat into the paychecks of our employees and into the district's overall budget. Healthcare costs have been impacting recruitment and retention of school staff on the Kenai and across Alaska. Our hope is that having the opportunity to join a healthcare plan with a larger pool of employees will benefit us and all the districts in Alaska. I would like to end by thanking Representative Vance for sponsoring HB 21 so that all Alaskan school districts have the opportunity for more healthcare options. Thank you.
Representative Fields appears to have a question.
Thank you, through the chair. Thanks, Superintendent Holland, for calling in. I know you've made some trips down here, so thanks for taking the time to advocate the session on a range of issues. My question is, my understanding is that right now there is an opportunity for political subdivisions under existing law to participate in Alaska Care. Why is that not working? This is just my lack of understanding about how the system works now. Thank you.
Through the chair and Representative Fields, thank you. I'm not sure I completely understand the question. We currently don't have the opportunity to join into the Alaska healthcare plan. Right now, you know, what we do choose is through our negotiated agreement and CBA. So anything we do, even with this as an option, would have to be part of that process. Currently, you know, we are a self-insured district, and we are not able to get, when we go to RFP, there are no other healthcare providers that would offer us anything that was better than what we currently do. And so we are still in the self-insured place.
Okay.
And sorry, I can't answer your question fully.
Okay. Through the chair, I think it's called the Alaska Care Political Subdivision Insurance Plan. And Mr. Chairman, I don't know if someone from Division of Retirement and Benefits is online. Maybe could answer after Mr. Holland has testified. I did have another question for him.
Does not appear that we have anybody from that division online.
I was hoping through the chair that Mr. Holland or Superintendent Holland could provide a little additional information for those of us who don't live on the Kenai about the district shopping around for plans and looking at different options, what kind of premiums they're seeing, how it compares to Alaska Care. One of the questions I've had is there's the Pacific Health Coalition. Has the Peninsula Borough School District tried to use that pool? Was it not available? What are the dynamics there? So just any additional information about the school district's experience would enlighten me. Thank you.
Mr. Holland, if you heard the question, you could feel free to respond, please.
All right. Yes, thank you. Through the chair, Representative Fields, I'll do my best to answer that. So for a school district, for the Kenai Peninsula Borough School District, every year we go out to bid on our healthcare plan. And so we offer, we submit our actual costs, what we're spending, all the expenditures, and put it out to bid. And so this year, typically we'll have Blue Cross, Blue Shield, or Public Health Trust come back with an offer. This year we didn't have anyone willing to take us on. Our costs overall are about $25,000 per employee, the district costs. And we are currently 85% district paid, 15% employee paid. My understanding with the option available to us is about $20,000 per employee, so there potentially is a significant savings to us through this. But the other options mentioned are not things that I'm familiar with.
Thank you.
I mean, I don't know if that answered your question or if you'd like to have me elaborate.
Well, I'll wait for other members, but I really appreciate you being here so I can learn more about y'all's experience.
So, Mr. Holland, am I I guess I'm to understand that the Kenai School District currently self-insures for healthcare. Is that correct?
That is correct. Yes, sir. Through the chair, yes.
Yeah. So is that in conjunction with the Kenai Borough, or is that separate from what the Kenai Borough does?
Through the chair, it's a great question. We are separate from the borough, and we have had some talks about looking at combining, and depending on what happens this year, we will be exploring that more. Both bargaining units do this differently, so we have two separate from the borough with our associations in the district, and then the borough has their association that they negotiate this with as well. But we are interested in combining to make a larger pool.
And Mr. Holland, do you by chance know what your balance of your account or reserve for excess losses would be for yourself?
Program? Through the chair. I don't have that in front of me, and my finance director is not here with me.
Okay. I appreciate that, Mr. Holland. Representative Cox, did you have a question?
Yes. Thank you. Through the chair, Mr. Holland, does the school district also administer the policy, or is that contracted through some outfit that administers insurance, self-insured insurance policies for the self-insurer?
Through the chair, Representative Prax, thank you for the question. Yeah, that's a great question. So we work with RAIN as we're self-insured. We manage it here, but we do have support from RAIN. We're part of the Aetna network with that as well. And then we do have consultants that work with us on how we can, maximize what we're doing, costs that we can save through different ways of doing it. But we do handle healthcare on our own here as a district.
Okay. Follow up. Do you have a stop loss policy, I think it's called? If you exceed X amount, then there is a separate policy that comes in to take over the excess costs?
Through the chair, Representative Prax, we do have a stop loss policy. I don't have that maximum amount in front of me when we hit that, but that is in place.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Fields.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Through the chair again to Superintendent Holland. Superintendent Holland, would you anticipate that if a bill like this passed, you would basically have the opportunity to join current Alaska Care plans, or would you anticipate that, maybe there would be additional, perhaps cheaper and less generous plan options made available, or in your view, is that unknown? Thank you.
Through the chair, Representative Fields, my belief is that we would join this plan. Now, that would, once again, take our associations also agreeing with that. But right now, I have had several people reach out about this from our associations, from our teachers, who are concerned about the healthcare costs. It's really just completely eroding the paychecks of our employees, particularly where I'm concerned are our single, we have single parents, some of them in classified positions where the vast majority of their check is going to healthcare.
Through the chair, I definitely share that concern and wondered if I could ask another question as well.
Go ahead.
Thank you. Superintendent Holland, you're probably aware one thing that I think a question that's been raised is what would the impact on Alaska Care rates and therefore state expenses be based on the claims experience of different groups of employees who might join Alaska Care. Are you able to address the experience within Kenai Peninsula Borough School District? Do you have any insight on whether, an insurer would view that as a potentially more risky, less risky group to be adding to Alaska Care, and give us any insight about, potential increase or maybe decrease costs from the state? Thank you. For its current employees.
Through the chair, Representative Fields, Yeah, that's a great question. You know, one of those, how do the current employees and associations feel about districts joining in? I would hope that with the larger number of people coming in from districts, we have 1,200 employees, that those costs would go down, that by adding us to their pool, it would go down, as would our costs go down. And I think a lot of, you know, those decisions rely on, you know, what are those deductibles, what are those co-pays, all of that. I think those all have impacts on the overall scenario. And that's part of why we, at this point, are still framing it as an option. You know, we have to see what we keep saying the devils are in the details. We don't know all those details yet. But our anticipation, or we're anticipating that those costs will go down for both groups.
Right. I do have another question, if I might, Mr. Chairman. Superintendent Holland, I assume that your employees are union members, or at least a large number of them are. Would you envision having to renegotiate a collective bargaining agreement if you were to join AlaskaCare? Would this be a significant enough change to wages and working conditions, or do you not have an opinion on that yet?
Yep, through the chair. We are doing our negotiations next year. We did them so every 3 years. We did them this last time. Interest-based went very well. I would anticipate through that process we would change over. So we'd review all the actuals associated with this and then make a decision next year. I think for other districts, if they were not in that cycle, it'd be similar. They could either amend their current contracts to review this or wait for that next cycle. And I think it's going to vary site to site. Some places may be perfectly comfortable with what they have. They may have a number of people who have opted out or have other insurances, or, you know, maybe they're in Anchorage and they have something with enough numbers that they're feeling comfortable where they are. But this would go through our regular process.
And Mr. Chairman, if I could ask one more question. Superintendent Holland, are you able to share some of the details about your current insurance in terms of premium, deductibles, copays, just so we could gain an understanding? How does that compare to AlaskaCare? Is that possible?
Yep, through the chair, Representative Fields. So I'm going to feel really bad I didn't bring some backup in here with me today. I just did this with the Senate last, no one asked me a question. So, yeah, thank you. So I don't have everything in front of me. I can tell you that this year, starting in January, we just went to a four-tiered system, so we hadn't done that yet. You know, the cost, that's where it comes back to that. My big concerns are the costs for a single person with a family. That family piece of our health care has gone up exponentially. And but I don't have all the numbers in front of me to give you that actual, you know, comparison.
Okay. Through the chair, thank you again for your time and helping at least me understand a little bit more details about what you're looking at.
Okay. We will close public testimony on HB 21. Does anybody have questions for the bill sponsor? I don't think we really got around to that. And Representative Vance and staff, if you please approach.
And Mr. Chairman, I actually have questions for Bonnie Payson, if she's online still.
Let's see. Yes.
Okay. And I should acknowledge my private sector employer is a member of the Pacific Health Coalition, but my questions are going to reveal my ignorance about that coalition, because my private sector work has never involved the coalition. So I just wanted to ask Ms. Payson some basic questions, and maybe she could help me understand opportunities for groups like the Kenai if she's still online.
It appears she's online.
Okay. Yeah. Ms. Payson, so through the chair, an employer like the Kenai Peninsula Borough School District, are they able to join the Pacific Health Coalition? Is that something that's been explored? I guess as someone who's not an expert on health insurance, I'm trying to understand what options are out there right now, what options could be out there in terms of pooling and getting a better deal, whether that's through AlaskaCare or otherwise. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To Representative Fields, Kenai is currently a member of the Pacific Health Coalition, so they do participate in the contracted rates that we have negotiated on behalf of the coalition member groups. Interestingly, Alaska Care is also a member, but they only participate in the coalition health centers, the clinics, if you will, while Kenai does participate in a number of other services offered. And the way that the coalition works, it's through collective buying power, we're able to negotiate better rates on behalf of our clients. And so it's the strength in the numbers. And the more groups that participate in the coalition, this is a tiered-based pricing structure. So each of those services, the pricing goes down with the greater number of member groups participating.
Okay. Through the chair, if I could ask for clarification, when you say Kenai, Ms. Payson, do you mean the school district or the borough? And are they, and whichever Kenai it is, are they participating in terms of trying to negotiate prices for insurance, or what, how exactly are they participating through the Pacific Health Coalition?
Thank you. Through the chair, Representative Fields, it is the school district, and I also have Patrick Shire on the line. He's the Alaska member representative for the coalition. So, Patrick, please feel free to chime in if in the event that I misstate something. So it is the school district participating. And we have a number of products that we offer that we have negotiated this tier-based pricing, and each of the member groups then pick and choose. It's like a cafeteria plan, which services they would like to offer their members, and then they pay for only those services. And I hope that answered your question.
Yes, through the chair. I did have another question. So in a letter about this bill, the Pacific Health Coalition listed some considerations. And one of the considerations is, what would the requirements for entry into the pool and exit from the pool, and, you know, thinking about sort of adverse selection. And I'm curious, have other states done this? And if other states have done this, what controls did they impose to prevent sort of price shopping that undermines efficiency for the overall pool?
Through the chair, Representative Fields, I will ask for Pat's assistance on this one as well, because I'm not sure about other states. But, you know, we do have a concern about the entry and exit from the pool, because it would be logical for groups to enter the pool when their experience is poor and exit if they could get better rates elsewhere. We do feel that this would cause adverse selection and could destabilize the Alaska Care Group in itself.
Representative Sadler.
For the record, Pat Shire, through the chair, Representative Fields, I would simply echo what Executive Director Payson mentioned and revealed, that I'm unaware if any other states are actually open to other public entities to join their state employee group. And I wouldn't know what the circumstances were if they did.
Thank you, Mr. Shire. Representative Sadler is recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Through the chair to the sponsor, Representative Vance, I'm looking at Section 3 of the bill, and I've read the bill language, I've read the sponsor statements, and I believe this is authorizing the Commissioner of Administration to spend up to $100 million over 10 years to pay claims for school district employees who are self-insured. I'm not quite sure if this is an every 10-year limit or this is an annual limit. I would offer the opportunity to explain to me in plainer English what the function of Section 3 of the bill is.
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, this is allowing the claims to not be, as far as my understanding, to be in 1 year. It's floating it out over a number of years and giving them the authority to be able to utilize that fund to do that. And I believe Ms. Wood, through the Department of Administration, would be able to better answer that question.
Is that good, Mr. Chair?
No. Did you
Yeah, through the chair to Ms. Wood. I would repeat my question to Ms. Wood. Can you explain to me the function of Section 3? If is this $100 million a year?
Representative Sadler, we do not have.
Oh, we don't. I'm sorry.
Mrs. Wood, Representative Ruffridge. Well, we can follow up.
Thank you, Chair Sumner. I also had questions for the bill sponsor on Section 3. In regards to on line 17, which is number 1, the expenditures for this section are coming out of the Public Education Fund. Is that something that you can speak to or clarify why there were expenditures coming from that fund for the group health and life benefits?
Through the chair, Vice Chair Ruffridge, as I mentioned before, this is, I see it as an accounting mechanism. If you look at number 2 of that section, outline on lines 22, that shall over a period of 10 years from the date the first expenditure authorized of the subsection occurs, reimburse the public education fund for the money expended. So it's an accounting purpose to be able to help with the claims that are submitted by the school district.
I'll follow up if I may. So the I just want to make sure I understand the section. So school district has insurance. That insurance is under the state plan. And there are claims made on the insurance that those claims would be paid out of the public education fund, or the public education fund would reimburse the state for the cost of the plan. And I'm always just a little hesitant with the word reimburse in state government for all the reasons that we are all well aware of, given our latest floor session. But, yeah, just confused on that section.
And my apologies. This is Representative Sarah Vance for the record, House District 6. I failed to mention that at the beginning. Through the chair, Vice Chair Ruffridge, if you look on page 9, line 28, there's a transition language that says not later than 30 days after enrolling in a health care plan administered by the state, a governmental unit that before the effective date of the session maintains a self-funded insurance reserve for the purpose of paying health insurance claims shall transfer the closing balance of that reserve to the group health and life benefits. It's also clarifying governmental unit, but there's some accounting. Much of this bill are the accounting mechanisms so that the transitions can be made to be able to come under the state health care plan and then be able to make claims and then reimburse as some of those claims may be exceeding what the contributions would be in that first year. But again, I am no expert in the insurance, in the way that this moves, and feel a little bit at a loss. I feel that Ms. Wood would be better in speaking to the way this would move.
Okay, thank you.
We're going to take a 5-minute at ease. We look up some information. Okay, we're back on the record, and it appears Betsy Wood, Chief Health Administrator, Division of Retirement and Benefits, is now on the line for questions as well. Do any members have questions for the bill sponsor or anybody else? Representative Fields.
Thanks. Following up on some questions about Section 3, I also have questions on Section 3. And I guess either to the bill sponsor or Ms. Wood, how much money is in the public education fund today?
Mrs. Wood, if you're on the line, you heard that?
Sure thing. Apologies. For the record, this is Betsy Wood, Chief Health Administrator for the Division of Retirement and Benefits. Unfortunately, I'm not the best person to answer how much money is currently in the Public Education Fund. I think you might need somebody from the Department of Education to address the current balance. It's not a fund that falls under the Department of Administration's purview currently.
Okay, well, maybe in a future committee hearing, Mr. Chairman, we could just get a little additional information, like if we were to pull, you know, some meaningful increment out of the Public Education Fund, what impact, if any, does that have on distribution of school districts for operating expenses, which I think is the primary purpose of the fund?
Representative Ruffridge.
Thank you, Chair Sumner. Through the chair to our administrator for the retirement benefits, Betsy Wood. What is the purpose in Section 3 of the bill that we're looking at today for expending public education fund for group health and life benefits, as well as, I guess, that corresponds to the question about the transition language that Representative Vance brought forward about self-funded insurance reserves essentially being transferred over to the group health and life benefits. Can you speak to that a little for me?
Through the chair, this is Betsy Wood again for the record. I don't know that I can speak to the intent of the language. That may be a better question for the bill sponsor, but I think I can articulate what we understand the language to mean. Although I could be wrong again, the intent is probably a better question for the bill sponsor. I think the way that we read Section 3 is that the Commissioner of Administration could expend funds from the Public Education Fund to cover, and I believe it's the first 4 months of claims costs that are articulated later in the bill. I believe in Section 4. And then I believe that the transition language at the end enables an incoming group, if they had a reserve balance, that they could use to offset that that obligation, that they could use their reserve balance to offset that obligation, I believe. But again, as far as the intent of how it's supposed to work, the payment, that's probably a better question for the bill sponsor.
Representative Vance, perhaps you could address the question.
Thank you.
Thank you, through the chair. This is Representative Vance of House District 6. If you reference page 5, line 16 on D, as mentioned, as Ms. Wood mentioned, under C of it, on D it says, in addition to the contribution required under B of this section, the participating school employer shall reimburse the Department of Administration the cost of paying insurance claims for the first 4 months the school employees are covered by a policy of self-insurance. So as I mentioned before, this is simply an accounting mechanism that the school districts can get into the program, have, if they have funds available during the transition, that can be put into the public education fund. But then as claims are made, it is drawn on that, and it gives them the flexibility to reimburse during that 10-year period. So it's simply the flow of the money so that the insurance claims can be paid.
Representative Ruffridge.
Thank you, Chair Sumner. So I'm trying to, again, wrap my head around that idea of the 10-year. So if the Commissioner of Administration allows the reimbursement to be made in equal installments over a period not to exceed 10 years, is this essentially, that almost sounds like loan language. So essentially the state would loan money out of the public education fund to cover the cost of claims, and then a school district could take 10 years to pay off that loan. Would that be an adequate or correct analogy?
Through the chair, Vice Chair Ruffridge, it does kind of lean towards that, but I think the purpose behind it is not to the intent behind it is to provide a continuum of the healthcare services and being able to make it flexibility. It's the language there. I think we need to point out is not to exceed 10 years. So if perhaps it was over a year or two period for the school to be able to catch up with the cost of those that healthcare, that it could be done in that time, but not to exceed 10 years.
Okay. Representative Fields.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Following up on that question, I guess I think to the bill sponsor, maybe to Ms. Witt. So if a school district entered Alaska Care and then the commissioner, say, effectively spent $10 million on participants from a given school district, but then that school district left Alaska Care, which I think they can do, is there a requirement in the bill to pay that back, or does that fall into the same 10-year time horizon? What happens if they just don't stay a part of Alaska Care?
Through the chair, Representative Fields, it is my understanding that they would, per the language of the bill, be required to pay it back, but I think Ms. Wood should answer that question more directly.
Through the chair, this is Betsy Wood. I would agree that our reading of the bill is that if somebody or if a group entered, incurred claims, and then left, that they would still be required to repay that on the 10-year basis. But I think that this is perhaps an area where the intent of how that would work might be something that could be clarified. But that's our understanding, too. It aligns with the bill sponsors.
I have other questions if no one else is in the queue, Mr. Chairman.
Okay.
Representative
Prox.
Well, I'm just kind of making an observation that I'm hoping that somebody in the administration has reviewed this to enough detail that they think it will work out as a business model for the insurance program. And I don't know if there's a lot of profit in getting too far into the weeds. I certainly don't know enough to ask questions and make changes to this. I mean, this is going a lot on trust on the administration, which is fine, but just that we have that assurance that they've looked at it and they think it can work out. It's a matter of time.
Is that a question, Representative Prox?
No, it's an observation that I'm not sure that unless we would spend 15, 20 hours studying this, I don't know that we could get a detailed grasp of it, detailed enough grasp to make a business decision that hopefully was made by the administration. I don't know that we have the expertise.
For the Labor and Commerce Commission, Representative Prox, I hope we do. Representative Fields.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yeah, I mean, I kind of agree with Representative Prox. It does take a significant amount of analysis. And the interesting thing is you could do that analysis in finance, but they would have less time because they would have a bunch of bills set up. So I think probably in our interest to do some due diligence at least. I did have a question for Ms. Wood. So if a school district entered Alaska Care, do they have to transfer reserves into Alaska Care? How does that work?
Through the chair, this is Betsy Wood, and my understanding is that that they could. And again, this may be the intent of how this kind of transactional mechanism is supposed to work may be better suited for the bill sponsor to articulate, but my understanding is that they could use their own reserve to transfer in to offset kind of that first 4 months. And then, of course, they would be making the premium payments as well, which would contribute, which would, you know, constitute their contribution. And I think that the public education fund mechanism is perhaps a backstop if they didn't have sufficient funds to transfer in. That's my understanding currently.
So, Representative Vance, would you like to address this?
Or? Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I've been looking at the specific page numbers to answer some of the questions. And on page number two, at the bottom, duties of school boards, to answer the previous question, on number one, it shows the amount amended, the area amended, including, when applicable, the amount necessary to pay for the district's participation in a policy of insurance. So it is requiring the school districts to pay for their own participation of policy. And then when you look on page nine, the transition language, as mentioned before, on line 31, it says, shall transfer the closing balance for the purpose of paying employee health insurance claims, shall transfer the closing balance of that reserve to the group health and life benefits fund, as Ms. Wood stated, that it any closing balance that a school district may have will be provided to that group health fund so that that money can automatically be used to pay for those claims. If a school district does not have a reserve, I believe that is what the Section 3 allows the commissioner to expend from the public education fund to the group health and life benefits fund, and then allows the school district some time, not to exceed 10 years, to be able to reimburse those costs.
Representative Fields?
Thanks, through the chair. Additional question for Ms. Wood. Ms. Wood, is it your anticipation the claims experience of additional employee groups would be pooled with Alaska Care, or would they be in a separate pool, or would, I guess, you have the ability to figure that out?
Through the chair, this is Betsy Wood with CRB, and I believe that the bill provides us the option to pool them with Alaska Care or to set up a separate pool, but I think the intent is to pool them, to pool incoming groups into the Alaska Care program. That's my understanding of the intent.
Okay. Well, did notice an amendment deadline for this bill at 4 p.m. tomorrow, April 18th. Please get amendments to my committee aid before then. If you still have any amendments in drafting when the deadline closes, or if you believe you need extra time, please reach out to my office and we will work with you. So we will set this bill aside and we will move on to HB 149. Bill by Representative Prox last Friday, and thank you, Representative Vance and staff. Last Friday, we didn't have time for invited testimony, and so today we are going to hear from Danette Schloeder, Chair of the Board of Nursing, and Tammy Peralt, Northwest Regional Liaison for the U.S. Department of Defense. And members of the committee will have an opportunity to ask the bill sponsor questions and invited testifiers as well. So, Ms. Schloeder, if you can hear me, please put your name on the record and begin your testimony. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Sumner and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Danette Schlater, and I'm chair of the Alaska Board of Nursing. I'm here representing the Alaska Board of Nursing. I've been a registered nurse in Alaska for 28 years. I've been a member of the board for 4 years and chair for 3.5 years. The Alaska Board of Nursing consists of 7 members appointed by the governor and confirmed by the legislature. Our mission is to actively promote and protect the health of the citizens of Alaska through safe and effective practice of nursing as defined by law. Our mission statement is supported by the American Nurses Association Code of Ethics, which identifies our profession's non-negotiable ethical standards. The board adopts regulations to carry out laws governing the practice of nursing and the work of certified nurse aides in Alaska. We make final licensing decisions and take disciplinary action against people who violate the licensing laws and set or clarify licensing requirements beyond what is provided in statute. Since 2019, the Board of Nursing has voted each year to support Alaska joining the NLC. The board members vetted the current enhanced NLC very carefully. This was done in part through presentations to our board by key stakeholders, public testimony, the experiences of other boards of nursing, and town hall meetings that we held in Anchorage, Fairbanks, and Juneau. During those town hall meetings, we met Alaska nurses who held up to 17 different single state licenses to practice nursing. Each one of these licenses has a different cost, a renewal cadence, and continuing education requirements. Prior to 2019, the board did not support the original NLC. When the enhanced NLC went into effect in 2018, more safeguards were put in place, making the multi-state license requirements even more stringent than Alaska's. The 11 uniform licensing requirements for a multi-state license assures us that the standards for licensing will not be lowered by joining the NLC. The Board of Nursing has reviewed all arguments in opposition to the NLC. We are confident that joining the NLC will not result in a loss of state sovereignty. The board will retain the same authority and power it has now. We wouldn't support it otherwise. The topic of sovereignty is written into the bill and in the compact. As the trusted authority in the state to regulate nurses and protect the public, the board disagrees with the statement that the NLC is unsafe and that nurses practicing in the NLC are less qualified or that the patients in Alaska will be at risk. We are confident joining the NLC will not create a threat to public safety, as the requirements to obtain a multi-state license are more stringent than Alaska's. There's a common belief that only the best nurses get Alaska licenses. The reality is that a nursing license of any type is awarded to a nurse who meets the minimum qualifications as established by law. In nursing, licenses are issued to nurses with over 50 years of experience and new graduates with zero experience. We do believe this is a necessary step to address Alaska's workforce needs. While it may not be the silver bullet that solves all of our problems, I can tell you that as a practicing nurse, it is needed. Joining the NLC is something the legislature can do to help. The Board of Nursing is charged with protecting the public, and such took it seriously when deciding to support joining the compact. The board determined the NLC was safe and a tested regulatory framework for facilitating licensability. We see the NLC as a way to help support nursing education, as it will provide a bigger pool of faculty for Alaska nursing schools. The enhanced NLC under consideration in House Bill 149 is the right fit for Alaska, and the board members are in unanimous agreement that Alaska should become a member of this compact. I'm here to represent the collective voice of the Alaska Board of Nursing. We ask for your support on the Nurse License Compact Bill. The Alaska Board of Nursing is the only entity in the state mandated to protect the public in regards to safe nursing practice. It's our board's expert analysis that the NLC is safe and will maintain our board's authority over licensure and enforcement of Alaska laws. Thank you.
Representative Fields.
Thank you, through the chair, Mr. Schlater. I remember hearing all of your nominations to the nursing board, and my understanding at the time is that people were only selected to be on the nursing board if they already supported the nurse license compact.
Through the chair, Representative Fields, that was not a question that I was asked when interviewing for the board.
I have another question for Ms. Schlater. Ms. Schlater, through the chair, we have letters from nurses that say there are states within the compact that did not do not require continuing education. Is this an incorrect assertion? You say that the compact is more rigorous. We have testimony to the contrary. I would appreciate seeing some evidence that the other testimony is inaccurate, if in fact it is.
Through the chair, Representative Fields, I can only speak to the states that I am licensed in. I'm licensed in three different states in order to teach. I know that there is the state of Washington's requirements for continuing education are much more expensive than Alaska. And Montana's are probably less. However, this is about initial licensure and not about competency, and just completing a continuing education class is, there's different levels of continuing education. There is academic continuing education, and then there is continuing education that one could get by completing an online course. So I can't balance the difference between what continuing education credits are better than others. But the board addresses licensure, so that's one of our primary responsibilities. And the lack of competency is addressed in our disciplinary process.
Okay. Through the chair, if I might follow up, one of the letters that we received in public testimony from a nurse named Stacy Sever says that states within the compact that don't require continuing education include Arizona, Colorado, Idaho, Indiana, Maine, Mississippi, Missouri, South Dakota, Vermont, and Wisconsin. If that is true, then I don't see how it's accurate to say that the compact is more rigorous in terms of licensure. I did have another question related to costs of fees, however, if I might ask about that. Through the chair, how much will nurse fees go up based on tiers of NLC nurses entering the state? If my understanding is correct, we're going to have local nurses paying fees that NLC nurses don't pay, so that will lead to a cost shift. What is the estimated magnitude of this cost shift? I know there's probably some uncertainty about how many NLC nurses would come into the state.
Through the chair, I would like to defer that question to the department, please.
Representative Fields, I think that'd be a more appropriate question for Sylvan Robb. Thank you. Mrs. Robb.
Thank you. For the record, Sylvan Robb, Director of the Division of Corporations Business and Professional Licensing. Through the chair to Representative Fields, just to address your earlier question, if I may, Mr. Chair, about continuing education. There are three states that do not have continuing education requirements, Colorado, New York, and Wisconsin. There is a fourth state that does not require continuing education for LPNs, but they do for RNs. That's Louisiana. We do have the National Council of State Boards of Nursing online who could speak in depth to the continuing education requirements, and then we could go to Representative Fields' next question, or I'm happy to... Whatever you want, Mr. Chair.
I think we're going to move on to Tammy Peralt. Mrs. Peralt, if you can hear me, please begin your testimony and put your name on the record. Thank you.
Chair Sumner and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Tammy Peralt, and I serve as the regional liaison covering the state of Alaska for the Department of Defense. Our office supports specific state policies that positively impact our military families. And on behalf of those military families in the department, I'm here to speak in support of HB 149, the Nurse Licensure Compact. Last Friday, you heard passionate testimony supporting the importance of this legislation for Alaska. And today, I'd like to address the importance of this bill for our military families. Alaska's home to nearly 8,000 active duty military spouses, the second highest per capita percentage in the nation. 34% of military spouses in the workforce are in licensed occupations. The highest percentage are in healthcare specialties. Military spouses want to work in their chosen profession, and licensure, especially if there's a long wait time, can be a barrier when they are seeking employment. Occupational licensure interstate compacts, including the nurse licensure compact before you today, are considered the best form of licensure portability for our military spouses. Our office supports compacts for 14 separate occupations. Indeed, in FY 2021 NDAA, Congress codified the importance of considering spouse licensure portability in basing decisions. An occupational licensure compact passage is one of the measures utilized by the services when making these basing decisions. Alaska is one of only 5 states that have not adopted any occupational licensure compacts. During the hearing on Friday, it was brought up that Alaska provides a temporary military spouse courtesy license. Indeed, this is an excellent tool for those professions without a compact. And we are grateful for Alaska's support in implementing the military spouse courtesy license. However, we believe that compacts like the one before you today best serve military spouses by ensuring they can avoid the cumbersome process of transferring an occupational license. A temporary courtesy license is just that. It's temporary. It still requires a full licensure process. The NLC reduces barriers to employment and supports our military families. The Alaska economy would benefit from the contribution of additional military spouses in the workforce. We have a tremendous thank you to Representative Prax for bringing this legislation forward, and I stand for your questions.
I have a question.
Representative Fields.
Thank you, through the chair. Ms. Perot, last year we did pass a bill designed to expedite licensing for military spouses. Has that not been implemented, or what is the... Why has that not made a difference? Thank you. I think it was perhaps Senate Bill 13, if I remember correctly.
Mm-hmm. Through the chair to Representative Fields, thanks so much for that question. Indeed, you did pass a bill last year to expedite military spouse courtesy licenses, and that has absolutely been helpful, as I said, for those occupations especially that don't have a compact. But you have a better tool in front of you with the Nurse Licensure Compact to support our military spouses. It provides that streamlined process where a military spouse can get to work right away in the state. And the temporary license is just that. It's temporary.
Representative Carrick.
Thank you, through the chair, Ms. Peralt. You mentioned, I think, 12 professions which the Department of Defense supports compacting for on a state level. I was curious if there are any compacted professions which the Department of Defense doesn't have an opinion on or which doesn't support compacting for, and why.
Through the chair, thank you very much for this question. There are a total of 15 occupational licensure compacts which are available for the states to adopt across the nation. And our office supports 14 of those. There's only one outlier, unfortunately, and that's the Interstate Medical Licensure Compact. We simply haven't been engaged in supporting that compact, not because we have any opposition for it. It simply is a profession that we do not have a high rate of military spouses in. This is a compact for physicians. Additionally, that compact doesn't have any specific provisions in it for where a military spouse can maintain their home state of residency. And that compact works a little bit differently than a nurse licensure compact or some other compacts which are we support for our military spouses.
Representative Wright.
Thank you, Chair. Through the chair, Ms. Perot, how are you doing? This is Stanley Wright, and I just wanted to know how the compact, nursing compact, is working in other states for our military members. Do you have any anecdotal stories or any data, anything you can tell us about it?
Yeah. Through the chair to Representative Wright, great to hear your voice, sir. Yes. The nurse licensure compact, the story I hear most commonly from military spouses, and I think you know, I'm located in Washington State. I'm a military spouse myself. I live and work amongst military spouses. And when a military spouse talks to me and she or he says, I'm a nurse, but I know we are about to get stationed in a non-compact state. And they oftentimes say, do you know anything about the licensure process in that state? This is the first time I've had to get a non-compact license in maybe a decade. This is the first time I've had to go through this process again, because after all, 39 states are compact states. It just is another barrier that I think discourages our military spouses from taking that next step to go to work at their new duty station.
Representative Wright.
So would you say this compact would ease the financial burden on these military families?
Representative Wright, through the chair, absolutely. We really are absolutely concerned on that time frame, which can often be 90 days to 6 months, during the time when a military spouse moves from Texas or Virginia to the state of Alaska and they have to wait for licensure. They may be unpacking, moving, trying to get their family settled, along with applying for positions. We really want to reduce that time as much as we can so that this burden of moving from state to state is reduced for our military families.
Thank you.
Representative Fields.
Did the head of the Board of Nursing say that the National Council of State Boards of Nursing is available for questions? I don't remember if I heard that correctly.
It does appear so. We have a Molly Maeve Lusk from the National Council on State Board of Nursing.
Great. If I could ask her a question, perhaps. Thanks, Ms. Lusk, if I heard your name correctly. I believe that the president of the National Council of State Boards of Nursing wrote to the Nevada legislature that the Nurse License Compact, quote, does not purport to alleviate a state nursing shortage, end quote, and is only intended to, quote, enable nurse mobility during extreme times of shortage. Am I understanding that correctly, and could you provide a little more context about that communication? I guess Nevada was looking at this.
Through the chair, Representative Fields, thank you so much for the question. Yes, that is correct. The NLC is not a, as people have said, a silver bullet for the workforce shortage. The Nurse Licensure Compact is simply one tool in the toolbox that enables the state to efficiently and effectively address times of great shortage in the nursing workforce. Is a multi-state licensure solution and a necessary tool. Under the NLC, nurses are able to easily cross state lines and provide care, and it also aids nurse educators to instruct Alaska students via remote education, enabling gaps in nursing facility faculty shortages to be supplemented to further help to support a pipeline of interstate of nurses in state. The NLC is a benefit to nurses. It's an incentive for nurses to remain in Alaska, but it is not the one solution to the nursing workforce crisis. It is simply a tool in the toolbox to aid in addressing any shortages that facilities may be facing.
Great. If I could ask a follow-up question. Ms. Lusk, would you say one of the goals of the Nurse License Compact is to help employers engage in union busting when nurses are on strike?
Through the chair, Representative Fields, no. I would not say that's one of the goals of the Nurse Licensure Compact. The Nurse Licensure Compact is a benefit to individual nurses. It is a multi-state licensure solution that decreases the burden, both administratively and financially, on nurses to hold multi-state licenses or to hold licenses in multiple states. And it enables them to have more mobility and flexibility in their career. But no, the NLC does not support strike busting in any way.
Okay. That's what I assumed, if I could just follow up. So you would have no objection then to language that prohibited employers from using the NLC to bust a strike if such a strike were to occur?
Through the chair, Representative Fields, we would have to review any language. Obviously, no, because it is a compact, can be amended onto the compact that would materially deviate. So Alaska's participation within the compact. So any language we would like to review to make sure that Alaska would still be joining the same compact as the rest of the 39 jurisdictions.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, I would just follow up noting that in Minnesota, there actually was a strike recently with 15,000 Minnesota nurses, and there were actually rapid response agencies that were helping dispatch nurses to break the strike. So I think this is something, sadly, that happens in the healthcare industry, and I would just want to make sure we're not unwittingly enabling union busting and strike breaking with scabs with the NLC. Thank you.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, if I could ask, if I don't know if there are other invited testifiers online.
There are no other invited testifiers. We have the bill's sponsor and staff here. If
perhaps I could request a continuation of invited testimony to hear from more healthcare providers in Alaska. With the chair's indulgence.
We can. And we'll have a future hearing on this bill, and we can get with committee members if there are invited testifiers that they would like to bring on.
Thank you.
So we will set HB 149 aside. We noticed a amendment deadline for Thursday, April 20th at 4 p.m., please get amendments to my committee aide before then, and if you still have any amendments in drafting when the deadline comes, please reach out to my office and we will work with you. That concludes our business today. Seeing no other business before the committee, we will adjourn. Let the record reflect the time is 4:50 p.m.